Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
Ready and ready to go. New week, and
Monday.
There's no bigger war right now in the world, but let's keep working at trying to keep it that way and reduce the chances of that happening. And we'll be talking a bit about foreign policy. There's a new book out of the Washington Post put out, which is interesting, because they bring up the subject of a meeting held in July of 2017, right after Trump was elected. And it involved Mattis and Tillerson and Kahn. And they sort of set Trump up. They thought, this guy needs educated. And they did sort of a tutorial for him, which the whole principle, if it had any idea who Trump was, he didn't need a tutorial on what he believes.
So
they put this up, and it's all to teach him how to rein in his foreign policy. Not that his foreign policy was without flaws, and not that his diplomacy was without flaws, but what they were doing was just sort of crazy. Bannon was there, and he, when the meeting was going on and this lecturing going on, Bannon, they quoted him as just cringing, you know, at it. But it's interesting. That's almost 3 years ago now, and it just sort of broke out with a book coming out. Our friend Larry Johnson wrote about it in a similar way, and then the article in the Washington Post. And but I think it's a real revelation of how things happen. It confirms so much of what we understand about Trump anyway. But it also philosophically deals with the neocons fighting the realists and then throwing in a Trump foreign policy with populism, and the contest goes on. Then there's the political contest. Who has the power? Who has Trump's ear?
Yeah.
You know, so it was back and forth. And so this is going to be discussed a bit, but probably not on the evening news. Then, of course, I want to mention today, a little bit later on, Trump's latest experiment, because he's facing a lot of problems. So he has a new appointment, and we'll talk about his new appointment.
Yeah, that's true. And this it is fascinating, this meeting as it's been recounted. And you're right, Larry Johnson does a great job of talking about it. But you think about when Trump first came in, I want generals, I want officers, I want military. And I think it may be his lack of experience with the military, but in his mind, you get a bunch of officers in here, they know how to get the job done, you know, and get these wars won and over with. He doesn't realize, and I think our other friend, Colonel McGregor, would have schooled him well, which is that these guys are yes men. That's how they get to be generals. Not by winning wars, by yes, being political. And there's way too many of them, as the colonel said at our at some of our conferences. So he thought he was getting the warriors coming in here to take care of business. It turns out they sat him down, Jim Mattis, the general.
He ordered the president.
Yeah, exactly. They sat him down and said, NATO's great. You know, you gotta love NATO. And in I think the recollection was that they could see steam coming out of Trump's ears. You know, he was getting frustrated and furious. He said, what are you talking about? You know, this is NATO's a bunch of losers. They don't pay up. And then he went off on the generals. You know, you're a bunch of losers. You don't know how to win anymore. You don't know how to win wars anymore. And you're a bunch of dopes and babies. You can imagine the perfumed princes. And here's what Johnson's take, and I think it was a good take. He said, Trump's bad and crazy, deranged individual because he didn't want to continue the failed policies of the last 20 years. Now, we're going to talk about Trump's faults later, but in this respect, this is how he was elected, to reject these failed policies, the failed experts of all those 20 years.
Now, if somebody was sitting back, very objective, didn't know anything about these events, but listen to this, he would say, well, boy, this president, what kind of demeanor does he have? He's rude and he's blunt and stuff, and he'd get a zero. But then when they would say, if they were knowledgeable about foreign policy, they say, my God, about all he did was shout out the truth. Yeah. You know, so often he was blunt truth. NATO's terrible. Why are we fighting these wars? Why are we always losing? You generals, you never win. You know, and that's what the generals weren't used to, yeah, you know. Yeah. And I guess they were at a point where they thought they were the only ones to give orders, and they were going to turn around and start giving the president orders, but that didn't sit well. And lo and behold, I don't think any of those three are with the president anymore. But the real thing is how these kind of people get in. You already mentioned that he has high respect for the military of getting things done, but he didn't know that ordering the four-star generals, you know, yeah, around isn't quite so simple. But he's had a big turnover. He has been reasonably consistent in the Iran policies,
yeah,
but not with Syria and other places, up and down and troops in and troops out. But I think this is an interesting incident going on in this book, is because I think it will help people, you know, to understand, you know, the chaos that must exist there. I don't imagine with those three guys that he talked to, or they talked to him, I imagine they don't cut out, I bet they don't come out of the White House for a glass of beer, or, well, yeah, Trump doesn't drink, yeah, so yeah. Just for a visit.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, and Larry Johnson points it out, but here are these guys sitting here, they're getting read the riot act by Trump, who doesn't want to hear the same old garbage over and over again. But as Johnson pointed out, they didn't resign in protest. They didn't say, hey, you called me a dope and a loser, I'm out of here, forget it. No, they stayed in their positions, and they stayed there, and Johnson says, and I think we would agree, in a dishonorable way, did their best to undermine Trump at every turn of the step of the way, you know. So,
well, do you think that represents the fact that the generals they have a president that's independent-minded, and he's all over the place, but the generals still are listening to the deep state and the military-industrial complex, and they figure these guys are the backup guys, and they have to do this. So they felt that, you know, how the Democrats now are doing their constitutional duty, you know, to appease the president, this sort of thing. And they felt, you know, responsible, I think, to try to teach Trump something. But I don't know how long that took until all three were gone, but the first year was in and out, and even now, can Trump say, well, I finally got my team together? Because this new appointment, I think we need to talk about too, Wormser's coming into the administration. And I know you understand what Wormser was all about, and I understand it, and we remember him well, because his reputation was that he was the architect. There were a bunch of architects, but he was the big one. He pushed it, and his whole theory was, you just bomb them to smithereens, and the people will rebel. We won't need ground troops, and the people will be on the side of the Americans who have bombed and killed so many people. And he still believes this. And he never admitted that there could have been a mistake. At least Trump knows those wars were horrible. We're just trying to make sure that Trump doesn't slip into another one, because he's not consistent in the way he designs policy. And you answer the question, Daniel. Why does he hire a guy like Wormser? Is he pressured, or is he asleep, or does he think he can educate him? I don't think anybody has the answer for that.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on it, but I do want to go back to something you said, because you brought up the issue of the deep state and whether these guys were sticking around because they were representing the interests of the deep state and they didn't dare let go. And I think that's a good point. And Johnson also talks about it in his piece, because he says inadvertently these Washington Post writers who wrote this book, and it's supposed to show that Trump's crazy, it's called A Stable Genius, they expose their own biases, and I would say their adherence to the being the media arm of the deep state. And here's a quote from the book when Trump basically said, you guys are a bunch of losers, you're crazy. This is the book. Rather than getting him to appreciate America's traditional role in alliances, Trump began to tune out and eventually push away the experts who believed their duty was to protect the country by restraining his more dangerous impulses. You know, that says everything.
And that means the generals had no idea what Trump was all about, and they had no idea about Trump. And Trump is an expert compared to most everybody else in Washington. He sensed and he knew you know, how the people would respond to that. People are tired of these wars, and everybody thought that, you know, all this killing and money spent and everything was just atrocious in the last 10 years. So he was tapping into something that was very popular. But I don't think the generals had any idea about that. And yet, I think Trump probably is going to go down as pretty shrewd. If he comes across with a big victory this fall, they'll write about his fantastic victories. And I see it as specialized targeting of special interest groups. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's Right to Life, which just who would have ever expected this to happen?
Yeah.
And then there's he doesn't really offend the military-industrial complex.
No.
He might bug these generals, but he spends more money than anybody else.
Money's flowing, yeah.
So it's but he's still there with him, and I think and he's he has all the pro-gun people with him.
So even with his anti-gun policies.
Yeah. No, he was shrewd enough to bring these groups together. Now, we like to think of ourselves as a primary principle that we adapt to all incidents, and that is non-aggression and peace. And yet he can pick something out here, and some days NATO is good, sometimes it's bad.
Yeah.
And sometimes you protect your oil, and sometimes you condemn war. So he can do that. I see him as utilitarian, you know, pragmatic, but not fitting the principles of a non-interventionist, you know, even though we cheer him when he moves in the direction of less intervention overseas.
Yeah, and maybe he's just lucky because the people who oppose him are so bad that he can win over these groups, even not being that awfully great on life and on guns and all these things. So maybe he's just a lucky guy. But, you know, we talked about Wormser, David Wormser. You know, he's not a paid advisor. He's an unofficial advisor. And this is something that was originally reported in Bloomberg by Eli Lake, who's a neocon, picked up by John Swartz in The Intercept on January 16th about Wormser having Trump's ear on Iran, which is very bad news indeed. They say at least Swartz and Lake make the reporting that he made the case for the assassination of Soleimani, Wormser. And this is something that he's wanted for a long time. Wormser's wanted war with Iran for decades and decades. But here's what Wormser said. He said the assassination would, quote, rattle the delicate internal balance of forces and the control over them upon which the Iranian regime depends for survival. Basically, it's just a more complicated way of the neocons said around the Iraq war. It'll be a cakewalk. They'll greet us with flowers. They'll greet us as liberators. This is essentially what he said. And I think, unfortunately, Trump listened to him. But, you know, Wormser was always very close to Bolton. And here's another interesting point, that he was sending Bolton memos at the middle of last year pushing for the assassination of Soleimani. So that even further undermines the idea that, oh, there was an imminent attack, we had to take him out, you know, which is the justification. No, it's Wormser finally worming his way in to the administration.
But it's also a way for the president to appeal to, you know, the pressure he's getting from the neocons and try to satisfy them. At the same time, you know, he's not going to be sending in the troops by, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of troops in order to occupy Iran. He's not planning it. It's not going to happen. And I don't think anybody, even the neocons, are starting to realize how foolish that was, even though they got away with it in Iraq and nearly had a catastrophe, you know, with Syria, excuse me, involved. But it is too complex, and they have too much flexibility, because when you're a pragmatist, you can do anything you want anytime you want. You can change your mind because, well, I'm doing what's practical at this moment. I can do it this time, but move back. Never this whole principle of, well, you know, what we should be is defending this country and you know, getting along with people. And instead of looking for another fight, and I think that too often is what happens, because then you have pure old politics getting involved too.
Yeah.
But, you know, in spite of the politics, all this fighting over impeachment, you know, on a couple of occasions now, you know, when there were some trade agreements pushed through, the budget being pushed through, It was almost silence. You know, pass a day is no big deal. Yeah. The only time we saw a signing ceremony was with Pelosi, doing something that was a little bit bizarre.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the way that the neocons will sell this to Trump is, hey, we can get a regime change without using the troops. And that, in fact, is exactly what Wormser's memo to Bolton back in June was. He said, quote, Iranians would be both impressed and potentially encouraged by a targeted attack on symbols of oppression. Mm-hmm. You know, saying basically, if you assassinate a couple of these people, it's going to be instant regime change. No big deal. Don't worry about it. And this goes back to his long-standing view that you just got to kill a few people and everything will fall down the right way. You know, he's one of the authors of the 1996 strategy paper for incoming Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, A Clean Break, which is a famous document. And basically what they advocated, he and a group of other neocons, they advocated that Israel and probably the United States, too, would make preemptive strikes against Iran and Syria. They got to take out Saddam Hussein. This is what they were arguing way back in 1996. And then in 99, and then after 9/11, his big idea, respond to the al-Qaeda attack on the U.S., was, quote, we need to hit non-al-Qaeda target like Iraq to get back at al-Qaeda for attacking the U.S. So basically, no matter what the situation is, you got to assassinate people, and you got to bomb people, and you got to attack people, and everything will fall down the right way. Well, how well has that worked?
And he also mentioned that article about how we reacted to 9/11, and we've used this example many times. How did it do with the Americans? You know, the people come in and they bomb us. I kill a lot of people. Did America came together? You know,
yeah, exactly.
Especially at the beginning when we had no idea what was going on. I think it was probably more unified than ever. Then all of a sudden, you know, what he pointed out was, he says the American people didn't get up and say, "What we need to do is impeach or assassinate the president." There needs to be a revolt against our government for allowing this to happen. Of course, we were, you know, trying to sort this all out and say, well, our government did some things unwisely, you know, their foreign policy, and we talked about blowback. But that wasn't the issue then. It was pure emotions and payback and delivery. But for us now to turn around and say, and we didn't learn a lesson like that, we'll do this, and it'll just be for victory. So they must be able to, deceive themselves to an extent that it doesn't even exist and we don't have to deal with reality. And they just push it into some corner of their brain where they ran out of space and they don't even use it anymore.
Well, even just recently, he's wrong again. He says this assassination is going to really encourage the Iranians. Yeah, it did. It encouraged them, like you said. The largest funeral probably in the history of the world. Millions and millions of people attending the funeral of Soleimani. It really coalesced people's support for the government. So anyway, it's really a shame that Trump is listening to someone like Wormser, who was talk about a loser. Trump, you don't like losers. This guy's a loser. You know. Anyway, I would just close by saying, over the weekend we put out another update from the Ron Paul Institute, Guaido's Last Ride, about Juan Guaido, the person that Mike Pence picked to be president of Venezuela. We'd like to encourage you, in addition to subscribing to this YouTube channel, also go to ronpaulinstitute.org, subscribe to updates there so we can send you exclusive updates that we write only for our subscribers. And of course, again, we never share, rent, sell, give away, put on paper airplanes and fly off the building, anything, your personal information or address. So it's secure with us. So please sign up so we can keep in touch.
Very good. Yeah. Thank you. I want to follow up on this idea about Trump's ability to appeal to special interest group. And he just talked this weekend to a agriculture group, big one. And he's looked with favor for putting on tariffs and things like this. But the truth is it's even already been said that some of this tariff warfare going on hurt a lot of farmers, and a lot of farmers are in trouble. But he's still, you know, very, very positive. It's going to come, and there's a lot of trust still in with Trump on the agricultural policies and all the protectionism. But what I see subtly that's coming, what's occurring is in foreign policy, I think we're losing a lot of ground. I think we're losing a lot of credibility. I don't think we have real victories, because real victories wouldn't be interpreted by, you know, more troops on the ground and assassinating leaders. So I think that the people around the world are getting disgusted with that, and they're challenging us. They're challenging our dollar. They would like to even more. But the one thing that nobody can stop from coming is the correction in economic policy. Once you spend way too much money, run up huge deficits, monetize the debt, distribute the wealth poorly by making the rich richer, and not upset a lot of people, and then have an economic crisis. So we will have that economic crisis. It could come, with a foreign policy crisis. It could come before the election, and all odds are off then. I quite frankly don't think that a big event will occur before November. And even if it occurs in September or October, it probably won't, squelch all of Trump's plan. So it may come later. But to me, that's irrelevant, because long term, it doesn't matter. The foreign policy is bipartisan. The financial system and then deficit spending and the Federal Reserve, that's all bipartisan. And the members of Congress, you know, can't even keep up. They can't even read these bills, these huge bills they come up. You know, the budget came up. It's huge. Nobody reads it. It goes to conference, and major things happen in the conferences. So it's totally out of control. There is a degree of autopilot on what happens to a system when they take away people and the people's liberties. They spend the money and think they can solve all the problems, and we can bully people around. It's not going to work. The real discussion ought to be is, what are we going to do when it happens, and when is it going to happen, and will we be able to galvanize enough people to look and say, you know, living in a free society where individual liberty is recognized, honest money, and a free market economy based on private property rights and contracts, something along those lines has to be used to replace what we have, not to capitulate to this bombardment that we're getting about. The answer is in socialism. That I disagree with. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.